Good morning. I'm with the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health. Most audiences see, I say you might recognize me before my previous life. I've actually been with NIOSH for about 32 years now. I retired from the Public Health Service 2 years ago and embarked on a new career. My previous expertise was in bioaerosols and biotechnology, and small particles, small organisms going to nanotechnology, small to small, didn't seem like a big difference, except that the latter was dead, if you will. So my boss actually pulled me in to help rebuild what our team was doing with regard to exposure assessment to the workforce, go in a different direction, and also bring control technology expertise to what we're doing. The Nanotechnology Research Center is actually quite a broad program within NIOSH. It encompasses about 40 different federal employees across many different disciplines. We have focus areas in toxicology, surveillance, epidemiology, exposure assessment, instrumentation, and so on and so forth. I'm only going to bring you a small snippet of that body of work, but there has been much, much, much done in our toxicology environment. Our group in Morgantown, West Virginia, has done some phenomenal work with characterizing carbon nanotubes and what the toxicological effects in and animal studies, what that may pose, and is largely the impetus for our current intelligence bulletin on carbon nanotubes, which should be published in the near future within the next couple of months. They've also done a lot of work with titanium dioxide, and we have published a current intelligence bulletin for that particular agent back in November of 2011. We've also worked with metal oxide particles in the toxicology world, silver. They're currently focused on graphene, and we're now pushing into nanocellulose. So the toxicology world is done a lot of great things. My focus is exposure assessment to the workers. The workers are the first population that will be exposed to any new technology, and nanotechnology is not any different. So with that, the Nanotechnology Research Center was established back in 2006 as a component of NIOSH's Nanotechnology Research Program, which started back in 2004. Currently, we've conducted well over 20 different site investigations of workplaces. Our task has been to learn nanomaterial processes, but also to fill in important data gaps that exist within the occupational world as far as their exposure. Mainly, is there a release? To what extent is that release? And is there a potential worker exposure? Now, early on in the development of this program, there was a concept that was developed called the Nanotechnology Emissions Assessment Technique, and I focus on the word emissions here. And we have changed things since that time, since I came to the team, not because there was anything wrong with what was being done before, but early on with the team began going out to industry or to universities, we saw many of these operations were in their pilot phase, their research phase, their laboratory phase. So the exposures were very, very short. The personnel being exposed were very, very small. So it was about emissions that they were trying to understand, whether these production or pre-production processes could actually produce an emission. So the focus was a combination of direct reading instrumentation and filter-based air sampling, but the primary focus was the direct reading instrumentation. We have since flip-flopped that and gone with a focus on the filter-based air sampling. The assessment steps before going out in the field were quite simple. You develop a list of the target areas that you want to look at. You evaluate very carefully, critically, the processes themselves, and then you establish tasks or job tasks that you can focus the direct reading instruments on. You want to use these DRIs to help identify potential emission sources. This is done by reviewing the process or the process flow, examining the material inputs and discharges, evaluating work practices and tasks, and lastly, by reviewing the literature to see what you can find that others have done and published. Using the direct reading instruments, we use a combination of two different instruments. One is called a condensation particle counter, and the other is a optical particle counter. The optical particle basically takes one single particle, passes it through a laser beam. That laser beam then causes light to be refracted off. It's collected by a detector, and then that information can tell us the size of the particle, and basically just the size of the particle. The CPC does something a little bit different. Now, the optical particle can detect particles from 300 nanometers up to 10 micrometers in size. the condensation particle counter gets down into that size range that we're interested in, the nanoparticle size range. You hear Dr. Ostroth talk about less than 100 nanometers. The condensation particle counter can detect anything from 10 nanometers up to one micrometer. And the way it does this, it takes a liquid and condensates this liquid on very, very small particles to a point where it grows into a size that the laser and the particle detector can actually see it. Well, the techniques that was used for the NEAT was to basically characterize background concentrations first at the process and adjacent work areas. But it did it by averaging the pre-task and the post-task, meaning that you would go in and take a 60-second sample before anything happened, and then after that action was completed, you would take another 60-second sample and characterize that as background. The sample times, of course, are very, very short with this type of a strategy, approximately 1 minute in length. And then you had to document what was going on during the background activities to see if there was anything, person moving, a forklift moving by, that would have caused any spike that you may have seen in that background level. In addition to background, they also collected samples at the emission source. Now, the concept was to compare the emission source versus background, and this was termed a differential evaluation. If the condensation particle counts were elevated and the optical particle counts were elevated for anything between 300 nanometers and 500 nanometers, this might suggest the presence of a nanomaterial. However, if the condensation particle counts were low and the optical particle counts were increased with things greater than 100,000 nanometers in size or one micrometer, this is more suggestive of the presence of large particles or perhaps agglomerates. After going back and looking at the data, however, my team and I found out that background concentrations fluctuated significantly, sometimes in excess of 10 to the 6, 1 million particles per cubic centimeter. The variations existed by the season, by the day, and even within a day. So therefore, averaging pre- and post-task didn't adequately address the background concentration. We found that it was better to data log over the course of an entire day, turn that instrument on, let it run for the day, and then you could see what was happening at a background location. Quite honestly, most of the time you would see a flat level in a very well-controlled environment, such as a conference room or office environment. But there are other opportunities where you might see a little peak here and there, but that needed to be explained. And that's where I go to the next point, which is documentation of the critical events is essential. We also paid careful attention to the selection of a background location. We wanted to be as close to what was the background be considered in that process area. So we might select an adjacent office environment in a conference room that was on a different ventilation system. Also, we also determined that real-time instrumentation or the direct reading instruments were insufficient to fully characterize a work site, meaning understanding that exposure to that individual. So, since 2011, since I came to the team, we have changed things. We've gone from focusing on emissions to characterizing exposure. Many of the operations that we're seeing right now, and my team conducts about 8 site surveys across the country per calendar year, we are looking at scale-up operations, pilot production, or full-scale production of a facility. So we're seeing more workers. We're able to sample full shift and many different tasks. We use an array of instrumentation that is available to the practicing industrial hygienist. We don't want to use toys, if you will, that are benchtop scale that costs tens of thousands of dollars that the occupational professional doesn't have access to. That it becomes more of a lab or a research project as opposed to a worker protection project. So we use things such as the CPC and the OPC and other instrumentation that the practicing industrial hygienist has access to. We also evaluate engineering controls in that work environment, and that's where my role to the team comes into play. We want to understand that there is an exposure potential, but what is the company doing to minimize that challenge, that exposure potential? We also evaluate work practice to see how the workers' interaction with that process can actually increase or decrease their potential exposure. And lastly, we evaluate the personal protective equipment that's being used, such as respirators. One additional important step that we currently do that was not done previously is we try to provide context for our partner companies. We don't want to just go in and collect data and say, here's the information, and they walk on our way and they don't know what to do with it. This is a new and emerging field. They know less what to do with it than we do. And we're on the cutting edge, supposedly, of understanding occupational safety and health. So what we're trying to do different is provide that context by characterizing the occupational exposure limits and health effects that are currently known. We do this by reviewing the pertinent literature, looking at toxicology, and looking at epidemiology. Quite honestly, the epidemiology is extremely limited within the nanotechnology industry. But surprisingly, on the opposite side, there is a lot of information regarding studies that have been done for a variety of agents. Much, as I said, has been done for carbon nanotubes. Much has been done for titanium dioxide. But we found information for iron oxide nanoparticles, silver nanoparticles. So in doing our homework, if you will, we've been able to at least provide information to the companies to help them move forward with their risk mitigation practices, not just providing data, but give them a path to actually doing a better job of protecting their workers. We've also revamped our sampling strategy, as I said before. We still collect direct integrated samples, which are the filter-based cassettes, and we also do the direct reading instrumentation. But we've also added another component, which is wipe sampling, which I'll talk about briefly. As I said before, the integrated samples, or the filter cassettes, are the core component of our exposure assessment. This is basic industrial hygiene. All right? We do two different things. Now, bear in mind that we don't have a magic sampling and analytical technique for looking for nanomaterials. So we use a holistic approach. We use two different components, one of which is to look at the element of interest. For example, if we're looking for silver nanowires, we would have that analyzed for silver. We would also use another filter sample and have that analyzed by electron microscopy. As Dr. Ostrot told you, nanoparticles have very high surface area, but very, very low mass. So it's quite plausible that we could collect a sample, have a non-detect by elemental mass, but the TEM, or SEM, or whatever electron microscopy method we're using, would actually show us that indeed we did have these nanoparticles that we're picking up in the air. We also collect samples that are both focused on the area of interest, but also on the personal breathing zone. And we collect samples that are full shift and task-based. If we drill a little deeper on the elemental mass, like I said before, we don't have a method that is specific for the nanomaterial of interest, but we have methods that actually get us closer to understanding what we need to know. But it has to do with selecting the right method. Carbon nanotubes provide a level of complexity for us because our analytical method is based on detection of elemental carbon. Well, there's elemental carbon everywhere. Combustion is a good source of elemental carbon. So it's important for us to characterize what's going in that work environment. Is there a propane gas-powered heater, a diesel forklift truck, something that would contribute to that elemental carbon load? Now, compare this to if we're looking for a quantum dot, which is a cadmium-selenium core, then we would focus on the cadmium. Well, this is much more selective or specific, if you will, for the agent of interest as opposed to elemental carbon. Also, we need to evaluate the sensitivity. As I said before, it's quite plausible that we could collect a sample but not, and reach those non-detect levels. Bear in mind that a 10 micrometer particle weighs the same as 1 billion 10 nanometer particles. So you could see, again, for emphasis, that nano-sized particles contribute little to mass. With regard to the electron microscopy, we are using a combination of either transmission electron microscopy or scanning electron microscopy. Transmission actually gives us a very, very high resolution, but it also takes us a long time to get those sample results back. So this is why we're considering a shift to SEM. SEM doesn't have that level of resolution, but we can turn around a sample much faster because the prep time for putting that sample into play is a lot less. But electron microscopy actually allows us to understand the morphology of the organ, of the particle. Is it a spheroid? Is it a cuboid? Is it a fiber? And with the information provided by energy dispersive X-ray spectroscopy, we can actually identify whether it is the particle of interest that we are looking for. A quantum dot, we can actually with EDS say, oh, there, that is cadmium and selenium. So it is the quantum dot. It also allows us to do a particle count, so we can have a particle count, structure count, per cubic centimeter of air or some other format. The problem is we don't have a counting convention. How does the microscopist count a fiber that's overlapping another or all bundled up with a group? And this is something that we're working towards. And actually, a colleague of mine in Morgantown, West Virginia, just published a paper on a proposed counting convention for carbon nanotubes. So we're moving down that road. Also, we need to understand if there is a respirable fraction that we need to collect for, meaning that the current NIOSH REL recommended exposure limit for carbon nanotubes is based on a respirable sample. I already talked about the direct reading instruments a little bit, so we'll go over this very quickly. Again, we use still the CPC, we use an optical particle counter, but we also use a photometer, which is the dust track, which gives us a mass reading. DRIs, direct reading instruments, are very appropriate for assessing efficacy of engineering controls, or assessing the potential for emission of a specific task or process, or to identify a general increases or decreases in total particle concentration. But ultimately, they are not our core of what we do. We still use it. We data log over the entire part of the day, characterizing both a background and at the point of exposure, but we use it as supporting information for the integrated samples. Another piece of data, if you will. Why are we so inconfident, if you will, of the DRIs? Well, because specifically, they are not specific to the material of interest. They cannot tell you if you have the nanoparticle of interest or not. There are many anthropogenic sources of nanomaterials in the air. So if I collect a number and count it, I can't tell you, is that the carbon nanotubes that are being generated, or is that something else? Addition to that, whether it be the condensation particle counter or the optical particle counter, they are all calibrated to a sphere. How does it see a fiber that is 100 nanometers in length and 10 micrometers in length? We don't know. Then there's the wipe sampling. This has actually provided us with some very important information, something that we never characterized before. It cannot be correlated to an inhalational challenge. It only tells us what the surface contamination is. But what it does for us is it assesses hygiene, worker hygiene practices. We've had a number of operations that we've looked at where the airborne concentrations are very, very low or non-detect. Yet when we look at the wipe samples, we've seen contamination where they mix the precursor and character and other places in a concentration gradient away from the process, and we found it on refrigerator doors, workplace keyboards. So it's very informative to the worker saying, yes, okay, we know that you're working in a clean room, or we know we're working in a clean environment, you're wearing a respirator, but you've got to wash your hands before you leave, take off your gloves appropriately, use sticky mats. So it has been very helpful both to the workers and the plants. There is a standard method out there, a NIOSH method that we've been using, and again, it's been very successful for us and informative. We also can collect vacuum samples. Basically, it's an opportunity for us to not wipe a surface, but for like a carpeted surface or a filter bank, we can actually collect a bulk of dust and have that analyzed. To the present, we've done, it's actually about 12 different manufacturers at this point in time. Most have been primary producers of nanomaterials. However, we have actually have used producers that are actually putting them into products. And you can see the gamut of what we're looking at is very light, quite large. Carbon nanotubes, aluminum oxide, amorphous silica, and on and on and on. Where we're trying to focus now is specific areas of interest. My team is looking at nanocellulose crystals and fibrils. We're going to focus on graphene. We're going to focus on titanium dioxide. And we're also going to focus on silver. All right. Thank you very much.